Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is another installment of the Writer's Lounge, show number 42, March 4th, 2013. I am Tom Riddell, and along with me is Robin Eduardo. She'll be with us shortly. And introducing the show, today's brief intro to today's show would be we are having on Dawn Whitten, and she wrote a book called A Child is Torn, Innocence Lost. It'll be a very interesting story about a young boy who murdered his parents in cold blood, and that's going to be very interesting indeed, and she will be on here about quarter after the hour, so I hope you will stick around for that. Also, you can run over and see what we are all about over at the blog at tomriddell.com/blog. There you'll find all the reviews we've done over the 42 shows. And in the upper left-hand corner of the page, you will find a Blog Talk Radio player. Just go on over there after the show tonight if you miss it, or any of the archive shows, and click on your favorite author there and listen to the show from that page. Also, of course, we're in archives, so make sure you get over to the Blog Talk Radio site and look at all the archives that we've done throughout the last year and a half. Facebook also, you can go over and find us on Facebook, and of course, the Writer's Lounge, that should take you to it. We are also on Twitter, and if you want to contact us the old-fashioned way, we are in an email at twl11@yahoo.com. And upcoming guest authors for the next time around on March 28th. Is that it? No, it's not. It's March 18th. We'll have on a lady who will be joining me here in studio in Maplewood, Minnesota. Her name is Jane McCormick. She wrote a book called Breaking the Silence. And it's about the life and times of a high-class Las Vegas hooker, and you're going to really find that interesting because Jane had spent time with Frank Sinatra, James Dean, or not James Dean, Dean Martin, the other Dean, and Jerry Lewis, and many others, along with Sam Snead and Arnold Palmer. So that'll be a very interesting show, and she will explore the lives of those people and also the life of sexual abuse, which is what she had to encounter as she grew up in her life and went on to go into the sex profession, which is something that she's an advocate against these days. So make sure you stop back then. It's going to be a very interesting show, to say the least. Also, I have to promote Magic Pen Web Design. It offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Magic Pen Web Design promises that your website will be simple in content, easy to navigate, while also delivering an eye-effective pop-being design that will attract an interest to the books you write, along with the other products or services that you offer. Magic Pen Web Design promises to work with you and to explore an option package that will be the most affordable for you. You can go on over there at magicpenwebdesign.com, fill out the free estimate form, and let us help you. And with that, we also want to let you know that you can call the show today, and I do know that the author will have people listening, and don't be shy. You can call us at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-5613. 1436. And with that, I would like to introduce and bring back to the show Robin Eduardo. She's my co-host.
Hey.
Wonderful person. How you doing, Robin?
Pretty good. I'm hanging in there.
Yeah. What's new with you?
Nothing much. Just trying to keep myself busy. I've been kind of exploring some new things with trying to get back into doing more creative things with artwork and painting and working with clay. I don't know. I've been making dreadlocks like crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, I've been watching your Facebook page, and then I also found it interesting, we can talk a little bit about it, is the Walking Dead series, which is a series that I would like to get back into that I haven't really spent the time to really look into. I've seen some of the older episodes on Netflix, but you introduced something today on your Facebook page regarding, what was it, a prosthetic limb that somebody was building to, was that from a main character on the show, or was it something that somebody else was making?
Well, that's actually somebody else. You know what? I forgot. I'm going to go to my page right now to go look. I mean, it's awesome what he's doing. If I could kind of it's a prosthetic of Merle. He's one of the characters on The Walking Dead. And this guy, Matt Blasi, he's kind of known in the horror circles. And his son had mentioned, you know, I don't know the exact conversation, but something about, you know, that his, you know, Matt should try to build this prosthetic arm. So he's actually going to try. The video I have posted is somebody else's mock-up, and they got it. It's called, it's entitled Little Merle, and you could find Merle Dixon's, it's called Merle Dixon's Bayonet Prosthetic on YouTube, and that's pretty interesting and very, very realistic.
Now, for everybody that doesn't, know, Merle is the main character. Am I correct in saying that?
He's one of the main characters. He's not the main character. He's just part of the. He's back in the group, I guess, for a little while. He's actually in one of the bad guys, but he's the brother of Daryl, who started off on a bad foot but now became very close and enmeshed in the little society that they've created, and they totally accept him, and he's gone through a whole metamorphosis of his own learning about himself and becoming his own person away from his brother, because his brother's like really a bad guy. But anyway, he made that prosthetic arm to because he had to cut off his own hand because zombies were going to devour him.
Right.
And he was handcuffed to a pipe. So, but anyway, this friend of mine, Matt Blasi, he is going to attempt to make his own version, and I have no idea what he's going to do, if he's going to use, like, paper towel rolls and duct tape. Who knows?
Well, that's interesting.
But I think that's pretty interesting because the fandom, you know, not just with zombies in general, but just especially for The Walking Dead, people are really becoming excited about the series and just about zombies again, which is really great for me because of, you know, my book that I'm still writing, but
yeah.
But you know, it's fun because the fans really get into it, and I love to see that you know, that families are actually involved in this little subgenre. So
it kind of takes on the same flavor, I think, with this Walking Dead series, and maybe I'm exaggerating it and pushing it further than it needs to be. Maybe not, though, because I know it does have a pretty good fan base, but on the level of a Star Trek conventions that we see pop up.
Oh, absolutely.
Series,
yes.
The people are completely enthralled with this kind of thing. Well, of course, you know, they show up at Star Trek conventions dressed up as all the characters on the show. And zombies shows, they're showing up in hordes of people on the streets that look like, they look like zombies. So
They do the zombie walks. That's right.
Yeah, that's
well. I've been to several. I'm a big fan of the Pittsburgh conventions, and I've been to many out there. And it's like Pittsburgh is almost like my second home at this point. And yeah, they do all that. But I could tell you, there's actually a crossover there because I've gone to the Pittsburgh Comic Con. And so that's for comic books, but there's a crossover in the fandom because it's in they have it in Monroeville, you know, where the iconic Dawn of the Dead. So now you have these you have zombie fans going to a comic book convention, but then there's also the Star Wars and the Star Trek and other sci-fi fantasy. You know, people that like to dress up and do all that. The collectibles are for sale, and it's really great because young and old, it's a lot of fun, and I think people should really, really look into going to conventions. I've always enjoyed them, and The Walking Dead, especially now. I mean, I haven't been to one since The Walking Dead has begun, but I look forward to you know, meeting some of the characters that I have been able to interact with online so far. That's always cool that they're actually approachable and, you know, it's just so much fun.
Right. And before we get too far, while we get too far in talking about zombies, before we could probably talk much longer about zombies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know.
What I want to do is, and I see that looks like Dawn is with us now. Hopefully that's
great.
But she'll be with us shortly. But I want to touch on something that she's been very much passionate about and involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you have also been involved with and helping her sort of get it started. It's called Books for Our Heroes. Could you explain a little bit? I know Dawn will explain a little bit when she comes on. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about that. But could you touch on that within the next couple of minutes?
Okay, well, it's not my project. It really is Dawn's project, but I guess I kind of linked up with her early on, and we're still in the infancy and discussion stage because the scope of this is huge, and we really, really want to try to make it work and work right. So I don't know if we're able to pull this off, so anybody that could kind of, you know, chime in and help out, please, you know, we need all the help we can. But basically, it's for active servicemen and women to be able to have free Kindle or Nook books, basically, you know, e-books that they could use while they're in the field or wherever. I don't know if front lines, I doubt that they actually have e-reading devices on the front lines, but I know that they get downtime, and I just think that it's really a great idea, and we'd really like to figure out how to make this work. And but like I said, it is Dawn's project, and she could probably explain it a little bit more, but I have tried to get the word out to a few of my friends. I haven't really made a big push to pull everybody in because I don't want to make a false start yet.
Right.
I mean, I don't know, like, I don't know how to really approach it, which is why I am asking if anybody would like to, you know, toss around a few ideas to help facilitate this into action.
Yep.
I'd really love it if I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that we can have her talk a little bit more about it and kind of bring it up. I think it's an excellent idea.
It is.
Something that that could grow legs. And I know that everybody out there wants to support our troops. That's very important. Even though they are starting to come back, there are still many over there. So let's not lose sight of that, folks. Let's remember that there's still men and women over there serving this country of ours. So with that, I'd like to introduce the book, Child is Torn, Innocent Lost. It was written by Dawn Whidden and published by Brighton Publishing, LLC in 2012. And you may purchase it at Amazon.com Kindle. And then you can visit the author over at achildistorn.homestead.com. That's where you'll find Dawn. And this is what Amazon has to say about the book. When dependable Evan Madison fails to show up for work, police are dispatched to his home. His 10-year-old son, Brad, is discovered inside, unharmed and seemingly alone. He is stoic, sitting in front of the television, playing his favorite video game, Super Mario, and he's covered in blood. Veteran police officer Marty Keel is the first on the scene. With as many years of experience, he thinks he's seen it all. That is, until he discovers Brad's not really alone after all. Upstairs in his bedroom lies the brutally bludgeoned and deceased bodies of both his mother and father. When questioned, Brad confesses to the horrific murders. And this is what I had to write over at the blog. To go and play a video game. As I sat down to read this tale, I learned the gruesome details in the description of the book. My first thought, Brad is an evil child. But the feelings and images that are associated with evil were soon swept away after I read the first few pages when a psychiatrist named Hope has hope and is determined to find the answers that will save Brad. The imagery and feeling that the author employs in the opening of his story will grab you and keep you reading until the last page's turn. The ability to bind evilness and goodness together is key in holding the interest of the reader, especially when the main character is a traumatized 10-year-old little boy. The story is well written, and the interest level remains throughout. The only problem I had with the book is when the sub-storylines of the other characters took me away from learning more about Brad and what drove this young boy to do what he did. But even so, the author has the skill to keep the reader's attention, and all of the characters in the story are interesting and likable, so much so that we want to know more about them. Dawn Wooden has successfully made her mark in the publishing world, and I look forward to more from the skillful first-time author. And with that, I'd like to bring on Dawn, and excuse me, my throat is sort of closing up here at me, but in comes Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Robin. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, and we understand you had a little case of the jitters coming on the show tonight. Oh.
Well, yeah, this is my first official radio interview, so I'm a little nervous.
Yeah. Aww.
Okay, Robin, pumping the drugs.
Oh, boy.
There
you go. No, everything's great. I mean, just relax and just let the conversation flow and just imagine, you know, that we're sitting in a little room together and, you know, the lights
well,
are
I'm
down low.
Well, I'm in my PJs,
Hey!
I couldn't
hey, we'll
be more comfortable.
Couldn't get much more comfortable than that.
No.
Exactly.
And, well, there
Dawn,
you go.
Dawn, we did touch a little bit on about your little project that you're involved in, and at some point in the show we will touch on that subject. But if you could, we'd like you to read an excerpt from your book.
Certainly. You ready?
I'm ready. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. October 2011. Hope. In my mind, it was like picturing a scene from a Dickens novel. A 10-year-old child standing in the street with battered and torn rags for clothing, his mind and heart dirtied and shredded. In reality, anyone looking at the child would just see a normal, energetic boy running the bases in a pickup baseball game. But all the while, a tortured being was fighting to come to the surface. Anyway, that's what I saw when I looked at Brad Madison. But I was paid to look deeper and find out why he had murdered his parents in cold blood. I looked out the window of my office in the Armistice Mental Health Institution for Children. I was studying my newest patient. He had been committed 1 month ago by the courts because he was far too young to go to an adult prison. The judge also felt that there was more to the story that was being told. In the end, young Brad was deposited here under my care. Most of my associates believed these children were never going to be part of normal society, that our job was to keep the world safe by keeping these children locked away. I disagreed. I had hope. My mother must have known because that's what she named me the day I came screaming into this world, Hope. I saw more than just delinquents and insanity when I looked at my patients. I saw inside. I saw the torture, the actions of monsters that made these children who they were. I saw the loss of innocence and terror no child should ever feel. I saw the invisible labels stamped on their foreheads: schizophrenic, bipolar, body dysmorphic, obsessive-compulsive, attention deficit. I sipped a cup of hot coffee as I looked down at the field below. Judging by the gleeful cheers of the children below, you would think the scene was normal, until you notice the attendants in white jumpsuits with nightsticks and mace on their belts, and the barbed wire fences surrounding the field. My thoughts were disrupted as chaos erupted below. I strained to see who the guards were restraining. I was shocked to see it was Brad, screaming and fighting to get away from his captors. A nurse ran over to help restrain him, injecting him with a tranquilizer. As I watched, his small body collapse into their arms. I dropped my coffee, sending it splattering across the papers on my desk. "Damn it," I muttered. I knew I should stop and try to salvage them, but instead I quickly made my way down the two flights of stairs. How had I missed what happened? Had I turned away the minute Brad attacked the other child? And so on.
Very good. And that was at the beginning of your story. And as I told you, when I started reading, that immediately grabbed me because it was so filled up with imagery. And also it was a development of the character that made you instantly want to like both the psychiatrist and the situation that the small child was going through. And also, of course, being in an institution like that has its many, let's say that a lot of people aren't familiar with those kind of institutions. I was. I mean, I have been in an institution like that, so I understand the complexities of a place like that and the humanity that is there. But introducing an innocent child in such a gruesome act of violence, as I said, is one of the most intriguing points of your book, Dawn. Mm-hmm. Where did the idea come from?
Actually, it was, I woke up in the middle of the night, I had a dream, and for the first time in my life, I've said it a million times, that would make a great story, I need to write this down. And about 3 o'clock in the morning when I woke up, that's exactly what I did. I pulled my computer up to me and I started writing, and I didn't stop for about 3 months.
Okay, I'm sorry, I got a phone ringing here, and I had to go put that in the other room.
That's okay.
Yes.
That's okay.
it's funny how that happens sometimes at night. I know that I work on my novel, believe it or not, in the, probably 20, 25 minutes before I fall asleep. I kind of run through it in my mind. And on occasion, there's been times when I ended up dreaming about the actual novel, which was kind of really neat because it was like, wow, it's really coming to life here on the screen in my mind and my dreams, which I think is incredible. So it is interesting where we get, where we get these ideas from. And Robin, can you want to add to that?
Oh, no, I absolutely, I think we do come up with ideas all the time as writers, and it's really a good idea to keep like a little notebook or something by your nightstand or just even in the living room, whatever. I know I've woke up in the middle of the night and had ideas and didn't write them down, and then the next, and they're brilliant, and there's all kinds of... Yes, you wake up the next morning and it's like, wow, I knew I had a brilliant idea, but what was it? You lose the details. So I agree. You got to get those down as soon as possible and start doing your research and all that. And that kind of leads us into the next question. Actually, if you could tell us, what sort of research did you do, to bring this story to life?
Actually, I would say the majority of the research was done basically just Googling my experience. Mm-hmm. I was a psych major in college.
Right, okay.
I never followed through, but I knew a little bit about, psychological disorders from college. I know a lot of people that have psychological disorders, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically it just, even my experience watching Lifetime TV gave me a little bit of insight into police procedures and things like that.
Yeah.
So very. This particular book took very, very little research. It was more just an emotional trip, I guess. And anything that was wrong, my publisher pretty much fixed or, you know, told me about and said, no, you've got to fix
this. That's interesting because I never really thought about this, but the publisher is also inclined to do their own research on topics such as police procedure, because you may be writing a fictional story, but there are a lot of people, obviously, that are involved in crime scene investigation and all of that,
right,
that would kind of look at your book and say, yeah, this is a good story, but it's really not the way it actually happens.
Right.
And then so the publisher... My take on it would be the publisher would have to inject themselves into some kind of deeper research to maybe clean up your book
a
little bit.
Yeah, there's a certain level of fact-checking and stuff, I'm sure.
Was that process, did that process take long as far as the back and forth between your publisher and you before it actually was sent on its way? Print?
Well, not for the ebook, and I was honestly I was a little disappointed with the ebook version because there were, you know, several mistakes that I felt that should have been fixed. But they put the ebook out about 6 months prior to the actual print copy. I guess it's kind of like so we can find all the mistakes. We have time to find all the mistakes. There were about 20 different edits by the time it came out in print. So yeah, there was quite a lot.
Dawn, how long have you been writing, and how long did it take you to write A Child is Torn?
I started writing and stopped writing when I was a child in grade school. I started writing when I was about 5 or 6 years old. I stopped. The last writing I ever did was in high school, my creative writing class, and then I stopped for about, I guess, 45 years. I don't want to tell my age, but... at 59, I started again. So it was just that dream. I had a lot of friends that started coming out with books, and I was like, you know, I can do this.
You know, that is something I want to touch on. And we know that you're not a youngster, probably in the same age range as probably Robin and I, who have also started to write novels, and though you're much further along than we are because we're both struggling to get our first one done. But I think what happens to a lot of people out there when they're interested in writing and they have read most of their lives and they think, yeah, I can do that. But you know what? There's a voice inside our heads that say, wait a minute, you're way too old to start this. So,
actually, it wasn't my age that threw me off. It was my fear of not knowing how to do it technically.
Oh, okay. So the age didn't come into it.
No, not at all. I wasn't afraid to do it because of my age. I was just afraid. I didn't think all these years, since I'm a little girl, I wanted to be an author. Most people want to be, you know, some people want to be nurses. I wanted to be an author. I just never thought I had the technical ability to do it. I knew I had the imagination and the stories there. I just didn't think I had the actual technical ability to do it.
Man, that sounds familiar.
You mean sentence structure and all of that?
Right. And, you know, I started writing it, and I was halfway through, I guess, and I gave it to a friend of mine who was a college professor. And he likes the same type of stories I do. And I said, could you just tell me what you think? And he wanted more. And immediately I said, well, you know something, maybe I don't have to be perfect. Maybe I can get an editor that can fix it. and so that's what I did. I finished it. I gave it to him, and he said, this is about as good as, you know, anything I've read. Go ahead and try to have it published. And that's what I did.
Very good. And before we get too far along here, I'd like to remind everybody, if you'd like to talk to Dawn, a question or comment, you can give us a call here at the Writer's Lounge at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. So don't be shy. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. Love to hear from you. Robin, do you have any questions, further comments?
I just think it's pretty cool. I do understand what she's saying about that's why I said I commented earlier that sounds so familiar. It not being, you know, feeling unsure about your technical ability because you really see yourself, what's also familiar, you know, being interested in being a writer from the time that you're a young girl, or a young child anyway, girl or boy, it doesn't matter. So that kind of like goes with it, and having that fear of not being able to write, because there's, you know, it's going to be judged. It's one thing to write something for yourself, but when you're going to write for the public consumption, you know, that's when the jitters come in. It's like, really, can I do this? Can I do this? So I totally get what you're saying, Dawn.
Yeah, it's not easy getting up the, you got to be brave to actually send it in.
Yeah.
Because you know, yeah. Look, I'm no Charles Dickens. I'm I'm not even a James Patterson, but I've got a story, and I really believe
yes.
in that story. And that's what gave me the desire to actually go ahead and try to do it.
Yeah,
good for you.
Absolutely.
I stole your words.
and as you talk about your experiences in, you know, becoming a writer and your anxiety built around it to do that, can you give us a window into your life as you wrote A Child is Torn, and where did you go to write it, and how did you get yourself into the mood? We ask all of our authors this on the show, because I think a lot of us, including me and Robin, were interested in how that process begins and where it begins.
Well, like I
yeah.
said, it happened in the middle of the night, was the beginning of it. I do suffer from fibromyalgia, so I suffer from chronic pain and chronic fatigue.
Mm.
So I spent a lot of time in my bedroom, in my bed, reading. My favorite thing in the world to do is read. So basically, it took about 3 months, a lot of, in the middle of the night, my poor husband had a, you know, deal with the light coming on in the middle of the night, me clicking away on the computer. But that's how I did it. A couple of times I went out into the living room and I actually forced myself to write like a normal human being.
If I may ask, what type of computer do you use to write?
A Mac. I use my
okay.
Mac.
Okay. I was thinking you were going to say that because for some reason a lot of writers use Macs, and I think they're the preferred device to use when you're writing for some reason or another. I also know
you got a good keyboard. I think that has a lot to do with the keyboard is really easy to use.
It's the clicking of the keys. There's something about the feel of the keys that a normal PC keyboard doesn't give you for some strange reason. I don't know what that is, but we can probably study that at some point. But as you were talking about, you know, the process and working with your publisher, you know,
mm-hmm.
what was, further getting along in the discussion on that, what was the publishing and marketing experience like after you wrote the book? It's sort of like sending your baby out into the world and hoping he's going to get a fair shake. What was that like?
Well, actually, I sent out about 50 query letters. Is that correct? Is that the way you pronounce it?
I
assume.
Yeah, and I got back about 5 or 6 rejections. I got one acceptance, but that was from a company that I just did not feel comfortable with, and I did some research into them, and they just didn't have a very good reputation. So I said, well, forget
good
that.
Good for you that you researched. That's good advice right there.
Yeah, you
that
got
new
you've
writers,
got to look
that's
it,
a big
yeah.
one.
Right.
You got to check to see who you're dealing with, and
you can give at the top of the show. I gave your in the top of your commentary. I gave your publishing company a little bit of a plug here, but Brighton Publishing.
Consider it, and they did.
Wow.
And he apologized, saying, "I'm really sorry if this is confusing you, but we really would like it." And
wow.
I said, "Okay."
Well,
I studied
amazing.
Them. I checked them out. Yeah, and they were a legitimate company. There was no bad marks against them, so I
that's
said,
kind of
well,
like asking an umpire to take his call back.
Yeah, it was extremely exciting. It was here it was. I was getting if I don't get published, at least I did it. But when they said we made a mistake, we really want it. That was very
that's
enlightening.
That's neat. Yeah,
it
that's very very cool and rare. I mean. You never hear stuff like that. So cool for you. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, so wow. It was great. And they've been great.
Did you break open the bottle of bubbly?
No. No. I did go out and spend some money to, you know, go shopping.
Okay.
Oh, hey.
But
this
it's got to be.
Everybody has their different ways of celebrating, right?
Right.
And according to your Facebook page, I've seen that you have been doing some book signings. Is that correct?
Yes, I did one book signing here in my town, and they've been wonderful in the town of Belle, Florida. We did a book signing, and I donated all the proceeds to Grace Ministries, which deals with the rehabilitation of drug addicts and alcoholics and getting them back into a life.
Could you tell us a little bit more about how you deal with the not-so-nice aspects of being an author when you do get a bad review? How does it make you feel in the beginning? How does it make you feel? And then how do you deal with those emotions, say, maybe a day or two later?
Well, to tell you perfectly honest, I don't know whether I've just been lucky or people that have read it have just been too kind. I have not had any bad reviews.
That's good.
I don't know why. I know they're coming. I know that not everybody likes the same thing. I couldn't get through Shades of Grey. I know friends of mine that absolutely loved it. I couldn't read the Twilight series. I know people that just loved it. I guess I've been lucky. So I don't have to deal with that. The rejection from the publishers, well, it was disappointing, but it was what I expected to start with. So
yeah.
How do you think you feel you would if, let's just say, you did receive a negative review?
Well,
I'm just curious. I'm just tossing that out there.
Like I said, some people like vanilla, some people like chocolate. That's the way it is. Not everybody is going to love what I wrote. Some people are going to probably hate it. Some people are just going to pick up the first chapter and put it down, like I've done with many books that even I love the author. You can't please everybody all the time. Will I be disappointed?
Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, like I said, I don't think there's anybody in this world that hasn't been touched by mental illness or emotional problems in their lifetime at one point or another. I've got a stepson who passed away because he committed suicide. I had, in 10 years, we had 5 or 6 deaths to either mostly suicide or emotional problems. And it's just something that we all live with. It's a horrible, horrible thing, but it touches all of us. There's a little bit of everybody's got somewhere. There's some sort of emotional problem or mental illness in our family. So,
and I think it's important, too, as you touched on with your character, Hope, there are some people, and I can count myself as one of them, who when you're thrust into a mental health system and the family tends to look the other way, so to speak, because of many reasons, not because they don't love you or care for you, but because a lot of people just don't understand what you're going through, and it scares them horribly to even have to think that something like that could happen to them. So, for instance, with people going and visiting somebody, a patient that's in a mental health institution, is very unnerving to a lot of people. Not so much because they can't stand it, the sight of it or seeing people like that, but because they're worried that they may be at an edge in their life where at some point they could be thrust over the edge. So I think
it's frightening.
You do have somebody that there is another human being in a professional mode, as Hope was. And in my own case, many people that worked with me I basically thought of them as my friends because they were. I mean, they were the only people that I could turn to, the only human beings I could turn to help me. So in a lot of instances in your book, I think Brad is sort of maybe shy at first to connect up with this caring doctor, this psychiatrist, and eventually I think he does without giving too much of the story away. But that's another aspect of your story where you bring the humanity into the profession and don't make cold as it can sometimes be. And I can tell you that my experience was a living hell. The place I was in, some of the people that I dealt with were monsters. And I can't think of a stronger word to use, but there were also other people who were very, very kind and caring and loving people. So I applaud you for that, Dawn, to,
thank you.
You know, connect up with a character like that. And we are looking forward, I think, from what I understand from you, with something in the future with the characters in the book. Is that correct?
That is correct. I've got my second book, Faceless, which is now at the publishers. It's in editing mode, and it should be out in ebook this summer, and it will be out in print probably by December. Hopefully it'll be out by December. We'll see how much editing it needs. But yeah, Hope lives on. Marty lives on. Gene Whitley lives on, and a few of the other characters. Brad is mentioned, of course. But yeah, it continues, and I am now working on my third book, which also has the same have the same characters. They live on.
Good. What advice would you give to beginning authors and writers?
Well, I would say don't give up. Live your dream. I don't care if you think you can do it or not. Let somebody you know read it. If you feel that you've got a good story, somebody can fix your shortcomings. Somebody out there knows how to, you can go to an editor, you can go to, a teacher. Put it down. Put it down. Don't give up, because even if you, and today it's so easy. I mean, you can publish it yourself. You don't need a publisher. You can have a blog and you can put it down and just do it. That's the only thing I can say. Just do it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Rob?
Yeah. Life is too short. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to live to your fullest. And if you do have a story inside of you, I mean, what's wrong with pursuing that? But definitely don't think that you're above or too big. Don't think too grandiose about yourself and your abilities, which I know you weren't. You were like the opposite end of the spectrum.
I can't do this.
Exactly. but definitely to defer your work to people who can help kind of spit polish your little baby up and, you know, make it shine. So that's...
Speaking of
I love her positive attitude. I really do.
Speaking of spit polishing up your work, my gosh, the cover art for your book is absolutely incredible and amazing. Can you tell us, Dawn, a little bit about that process?
Well, the most fascinating thing about that is that the little boy on the cover, when I had that dream originally... I was thinking of my grandson, who is the same age physically, blonde hair, blue eyes, just a small little boy. I pictured my grandson perfectly. Mason was, but then I was going to even use his name, and then I said, no, I'm not going to use his name, because the kid had problems, obviously, and the kid was being accused of murder. I don't want to go into too much of it, but I said, no, I didn't want to use Mason's name. Well, they sent me a cover, and I didn't like it. And then
Who sent my publisher?
They do the covers, yeah. And I didn't like it. It was a picture of a kid with his mouth open and playing the game. But it looked more like a horror thing, more almost a comic book type of cover. And then he sent me this one, and this child is the spitting image of my grandson. The spitting. It was scary. And a lot of people still think it is him.
Without the blood all over his front, right?
Right, without the blood. Well, he's a little boy.
Well,
he gets blood.
That's close.
You have to see the audience, if they're not familiar, whoever our listeners, if they're not familiar with the cover, it's kind of graphic. It's the kid has blood smeared all over him. So.
Yeah, it kind of makes it look like a horror story. But
right.
It's more of I really think it's more of a love story. It deals with relationships. It is a murder mystery, but it is also a love story.
I think you touched on something there because, you know, if you're into reading a certain genre like horror, you would look at that book and say, oh, I got to buy that because that fits right along with what I think I would really like.
Right.
Yeah,
you
might
get
one thing.
But once you get into the story, you're kind of pulled in there and you're thinking, well, I really like this and I didn't think that I would read a book like this, but the cover did it.
Right. Right.
So,
it's a great cover.
So I think to pull people in from another genre, that sometimes the authors, if they use a little trickery in their covers.
Well, it wasn't
know,
me. It was definitely the publisher that.
Yeah.
But I okayed it. But, you know, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
it's a good cover. And it does fit with the theme. I do think it does. I don't think it's too much horror. But I could see how maybe, you know, what Dawn was discussing about the first cover. But I think this one does fit with the theme. It's not
right.
Overdone.
It has scared a few people away. I know a few people that refuse to read it because they think it is a horror story.
They took the wrong, right, right.
So, but,
And I think that's what I touched on earlier, too. It's because it involves such a young child like that, there's a lot of people who would, I can't read that. Oh,
and
I can't.
It came out in print just a couple of days before the Connecticut massacre. So it was.
It was
you know, I guess that threw a lot of people off. I mean, it was selling really well. And I know you get ups and downs and dips in your sales.
Yeah.
And it's still really early, but. As far as where it is in the market goes, I think for a first-time author, I'm doing, you know, pretty
How
good.
How does that work, Dawn? Do you sit there like people sit there and watch the stock market all day long?
Yeah, unfortunately, you become addicted to the Amazon ratings and rankings.
Okay. Right, that's interesting, because I know somebody else that does that, too.
Yeah, but you can't go by that. You just got to say, you know, if it sells,
it sells. It fluctuates, and it's so frustrating, right? You tell all your friends, oh, I hit number whatever, you know, a high ranking, and then by the time all your friends and family go over and look at it, you're like, you drop back down. It was, darn it.
Yeah.
I was up to or down to 138 at one point on Barnes & Noble. I was like, whoa, you know, 38 more, and I'd be top 100. On the best-selling list, but, you know, of course, now it's nowhere near that.
Right. Okay, everybody, once again, we have about 10 minutes left here, probably a little less than that, but if you'd like to give us a call and talk to Dawn, you can do that 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. We are the Writer's Lounge. And the question, once again, that we ask all of our authors is kind of a fun little question that comes up every show. But if you could sit down and talk with a famous person, Don, or writer, who would it be and what would be the first question you would ask them? And what I usually do is kind of paint a picture in the mind of you walking down a hallway and there's a door. You open up the door and inside this room sits a table, just a table in the middle of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And at the table sits that person. Who would that person be? And like I asked, what would you ask them?
Well, here's where you're going to find out I'm very strange. I would think that I would want to speak to the mother or father of either Adolf Hitler, Charles Manson, Ted Bundy. The parents more than the famous person. I'd want to know how they felt. And when did they realize, if they ever did realize, that something was wrong with their child?
Mm-hmm. I've seen interviews. What's his name there? The Jeffrey Dahmer's father.
Yes, Jeffrey Dahmer's father. I've seen that. That's about one of the few. I've never heard anything about Adolf Hitler's childhood, really. And they very Manson. I don't have a clue. I don't think they rarely.
No, I don't remember.
Get
ever
into
seen.
Those family members, whether they don't want to be bothered or the story is just not exciting enough, I don't know. But I'd like to sit down and talk to the parents.
Did they recognize anything, you know, that just, you know,
that
maybe even
right,
in hindsight,
yeah.
did it send up some kind of red flags? That's a very cool, I love the answer.
Yeah, it is good. It's very intriguing to talk to not the famous person, but the famous person behind the famous person, if you will, the family member, because everybody is connected to somebody.
The fly on the wall.
Right.
Yes,
but
a fly on the wall,
You know, be the fly on the wall, but it's also the mother or the father that was the one who that person at one time or another in their life looked up to. So it's interesting.
And could very well be the cause of.
Right, absolutely.
Their, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that oh my God, great answer.
So we could do a book about that. Adolf Hitler's father or Adolf Hitler's
his mother, his sister, you know, like when did you realize that your brother was a wacko?
Or Lee Harvey Oswald.
But we don't know too much about him as much as, you know, somebody like Hitler. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard any of his family members discuss him. We've heard about his girlfriend or wife, whatever she was, but never his mom or dad.
Eva Braun. I don't know, however you pronounce her name.
Eva. So, Don,
interesting.
We're getting along here almost to the end of the show, and I would like to ask you if there's any other subjects that you'd like to touch on.
Well, the only other thing you mentioned before is the books for our heroes. Like Robin said, it's just infancy stage. I don't know if we'll be able to pull it off. There are some sites that do deal with it, but they're very hard to maneuver. I found them, like, I couldn't even understand, where do you want me to go? How do I do this? I would like to find somebody that can help us develop a site that's very easy to maneuver around. I'd also like, my quest would be to get some really famous authors and have maybe contests where the soldier can become a character, like in a Nelson DeMille novel. And this way that soldier will live on in infamy as a character in a novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's always fun anyway to appear in another.
Right, I have friends that love being the characters, right. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it would just be such an honor for somebody like James Patterson to be able to give a soldier a character's name. And then they can choose whether they want to be good or evil, yeah. But if we can do that, but I don't know how, you know, like I said, I have
no clue. Just trying to get the free, just trying to figure out the logistics of getting free e-books to these, you know, servicemen and women. And it doesn't really matter if they're, you know, overseas, if they're deployed overseas or whatever. That's not the point. But just to say, you know, thank you for your service and, you know, in our gratitude as authors, you know, we would like to share our books with you.
Right.
If that's the least we can do. But just trying to figure out how to make it work. I mean, that's really, that's where we're stuck right now.
Right.
And if anybody is interested, go ahead. It's Books for Our Heroes on Facebook.com. So if anybody wants to look into to look up the group on Facebook to join, if they'd like to help with any kind of ideas.
Right. As a matter of fact, I heard from Nelson DeMille just recently. He
said
it sounded very interesting and he was going to take a look at it. Hopefully he'll, you know, go ahead and be a part of it. That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But any other famous authors that want to get involved or non-famous authors, anybody, I'm sure, you know, there's plenty of books out there that the soldiers would love to read.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, Don, we're getting close to the end here. Before we say goodbye to you, can you tell everybody where they can find you on the Internet?
Well, they can find me on my Facebook page at Dawn Kottman. They can find me at www.achildistorn.homestead.com. And I do have another website I started, www.dkwidden.homestead.com. We'll have my second book. There's some information about the second book up there, Faceless. And basically that's it. I'm out there.
Well, now, you know, that your experience here today wasn't as painful as you thought it was going to be.
No, it wasn't. I just, that New York accent, I just can't seem to get rid of it.
We're all sitting around at a pajama party here, folks. And we're with Ann Whidden, and we appreciate her coming on the program today. And I'm sure we'll probably be hearing from her at some point in the future. Once again, Book for Heroes, go ahead and plug into that. And we really thank you, Dawn, for that project. And we also thank you, of course, for writing the wonderful story that you wrote. And we wish you much success in all of the other books that we know you're going to be writing. And we watch you climb that ladder of success on the bestseller list. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for coming on today.
You're very welcome. You guys take care.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
All right,
so much.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Gosh, I almost hung up on you, Robin.
Oh. Well,
yeah.
Oh, well. I would have just rolled with it.
Yeah, and there was something that I wanted to mention before we left, and now I can't remember what that was. So,
oh, boy.
I think it had something to do with the show, although I'm not sure. But I guess we're going to have to save that for next time. Once again, pay
attention. Old timers is hitting us.
Oh, I know what it was. The slots, the sessions open from April through July are pretty much closed already. We've had several authors submit their works, and we have discussion moving close to the end here, and we'll be opening that up in April through July as we roll along on the Writer's Lounge. And Robin, here's your cue.
Well, everybody, good reading and good writing. Have a great night.
Good night. Thank you.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow. again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather.